When he finally succeeds, the small devils vanish and the beds stop rolling. Some year later, Margaret contacted Francisco again to find out if that night in 1970 was a fact or dream. His response was, "Don't mention that again, please. Please, it was the most horrible, horrible experience of my life." Margaret has a vivid memory of this event, and today she wonders what type of entities these devils actually were. All I can say again is that it happened. In the annals of UFO history, there are many cases documented where there is observation of entities but no UFO. I have investigated a Swedish humanoid case with some similarities to Margaret's experience. It involves the Swedish couple Sture and Tora Johansson. In 1976, Sture began his life as a trance medium, traveling all over the world together with his wife. He became quite famous, and celebrities like Shirley MacLaine and Dennis Weaver visited their home in Sweden. Sture also figures in the 1987 miniseries Out on a Limb, starring Shirley MacLaine, which I mentioned in an earlier blog entry. In the 1960s, Sture and Tarid were an ordinary working class couple, interested in UFOs and paranormal phenomena. On Friday, October 29, 1965, Tarid received a psychic message that the couple should go to a place called Vagero, south of Stockholm, at 10 p.m. Tarid had once received a similar message by phone when an unknown voice broke in during a conversation with a lady friend and told her to go to Vagero. But this time the voice also said, "Be careful, there is a power struggle on Earth." I interviewed Sture and Tarid on October 27, 1973. Here are some excerpts from the tape. "Sture: When we arrived at the place we were told to visit, those entities were already there, but we did not observe them until we had parked the car. It was not totally dark but twilight. We noticed them first over the field, and then they came very close to the car, about 50 centimeter. We believe they were 5 or 6, between 1.25, 1.50 meter, with large heads and shining eyes. The eyes were red, phosphorus. The entities didn't walk but floated around in straight lines. I wished for all my life that another car would come, but no one showed up. After some time the entities disappeared over the field, and then it was like a saucer tried to land on the car. Our whole car shook and the radio screamed in the back seat. We took cover below the dashboard." Vagero, Sweden, where the entities appeared. Drawing by witness to Johansson. Hakan: For how long did the observation last? Sture: Maybe 5 minutes, but for me it felt like eternity. Hakan: Did you see any ears or fingers? Sture: Imagine yourself sitting in twilight gazing through the car window. Would you notice the type of ears or fingers the entities had when you are absolutely terrified? You just don't do that. Then you have to be enormously cold, livid, and I couldn't act like that. But I am sure they had arms. After this frightening experience, Sture and Tarid just sit in the car for a while before going home. But they arrive home in the early morning. Several hours are missing. They never wanted to know what eventually had happened during that missing time. Ufologist Lennart Johansson at the observation site in Flying Saucer Review, Volume 22, Number 6, 1976. There is a case describing 50 small frogmen observed by witness Dominique Ménage on May 2, 1976. The site is close to the Franco-Belgian frontier. Between 9.00 and 9.30, the eyewitness is driving his car on the road from Matten to Litang du Banal. In the beam of the car lights, he notices about 50 little men in a field. They had long arms with webbed hands and also webbed feet. Two big red eyes resembling highway traffic lights. Height was about 1 meter 15 centimeters. They were simply standing in the field, doing nothing. The witness took fright and left the area as fast as he could. So what type of entities do we have here? Hardly aliens, unless they are robots. These creatures seem more like some form of elementals, described in folklore and by theosophists like Geoffrey Hodgson and Charles Leadbeater. According to esoteric tradition, elementals are artificial creations formed consciously or unconsciously by human beings. An interesting example can be found in the classic Magic and Mystery in Tibet, by Alexandra David Neal. But if the entities were elementals in the above cases, who sent these aliens to Star Enterid? 4. Esotericists, ufologists, researchers. Edith Nielsen and the esoteric tradition. In most countries, the UFO movement that appeared in the 1950s consisted of two factions, one with a basically scientific agenda and the other more or less inspired by New Age ideas and the early UFO contactees. Sweden differed in this respect as a country where the formal UFO societies in the 1950s were exclusively founded by esotericists, often members of the Swedish Theosophical Society, EDIA. This unusual historical development is mainly due to one exceptional woman, Ms. Edith Nielsen, 1911-1986, founder of the New Age publishing house Parthenon in July 1957. She was strongly influenced by theosophical and anthroposophical ideas and was a good friend of theosophist and Danish liberal Catholic Bishop Otto Viking. The Parthenon board consisted of three women, all active in the Swedish Theosophical Society, EDIA, Brita Rodosi, Rut Lindberg and Sonia Lilienthal. Edith Nielsen spent 8 years studying various languages and philosophy at the universities of Copenhagen, Paris, Berlin and Heidelberg. Between 1953-1957 she worked as a saleswoman for the Swedish publishing company Diana Bild Reportage about Helsingborg. 1949 was a turning point in Edith's life. She read An Outline of Occult Science by Rudolf Steiner, whom she later came to regard as the greatest Western adept of the 20th century. For several years she devoted much spare time reading books on anthroposophy, theosophy, Rosicrucianism, Max Heindel, spiritualism and mysticism. From her American friend Carl Vett she was told about flying saucers, and during the summer of 1954 she read the classic Flying Saucers Have Landed by Desmond Leslie and George Adamski, a book that completely changed her life. In a letter to Basil van den Berg, September 1, 1963, Edith told of this great moment, "The first book I read was that of Leslie, Adamski's Flying Saucers Have Landed, and something in me recognized the truth. However fantastic it all sounded to my intellect and narrow-minded teaching, we all have received. I am a Danish citizen, who in 1954 was faced with the difficult choice either to accept the doors suddenly flung open for an additional 3 years college, training in USA for a future career under WHO Geneva, or, to volunteer for the saucer cause here in Sweden, which meant to choose the thorny and stony road of the lonesome pioneer." After a fierce fight between intellect and heart, the latter gained supremacy. Edith Nielsen began corresponding with George Adamski in 1954, and the first book published in Swedish in October 1957, was Flying Saucers Have Landed by Desmond Leslie and George Adamski. Her second aim was to form as many UFO and New Age groups in Sweden as possible. In October 1958 she and her Parthenon co. workers invited the German New Age and contactee-oriented ufologist Carl Veit to Sweden. With his help Edith was able to inspire the founding of Malmö UFO, Solskap, Malmö UFO Society, on October 1, 1958. Later adopting the name Malmö Interplanetariska Solskap, MIS, Malmö Interplanetary Society, today the oldest still active UFO society in Sweden and now a local group belonging to UFO, Sweden. Parthenon published several of the classic contactees of the 1950s, George Adamski, Daniel Fry, Ray and Rex Stanford, Elizabeth Clara. These books had a strong influence on Swedish ufology in the 1950s and 60s. Edith Nielsen corresponded with hundreds of ufologists, contactees, esotericists and New Age activists from around the world between 1950-1986. The Parthenon archive was donated to UFO, Sweden and AFU and is a treasure trove of valuable data for research on the early UFO and New Age movement. The correspondence has also been digitized for easy access. During her first years of acquaintance with George Adamski, Edith accepted the view that the space people had organic, physical bodies like Earth people. but in 1958 she adopted the esoteric view, shared by A. O. Desmond Leslie and Mead Lane, that the Venusians were etheric, but could adopt a visible physical body when needed. She gave this explanation to Frederick H. Curtis, Massachusetts, USA in 1959. "You asked me about my opinion of this curious object. The interplanetarian spacecrafts belong to the so-called etheric realm. And therefore they are usually not seen by our physical eyes, unless our interplanetary friends want to draw our attention to their spacecrafts, or when they want to contact us, then they slow down the vibratory rates of their ships so that the vibrations can be caught by retina of our eyes and thus seen by our physical eyes." Letter, September 19, 1959. To get a more comprehensive view of how Edith Neale Lassen interpreted the esoteric tradition, I have made a renewed study of the thousands of letters she wrote to correspondents all over the world. Somewhat intriguing is that she never referred to books by Helena Blavatsky, Charles Leadbeater, Geoffrey Hodgson or Alice Bailey, some of the central exponents of esotericism. Neither was she seemingly aware of the Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lawrence. With her academic background in philosophy, these authors should have appealed to Edith. Besides, many of her best friends were active in the Theosophical Society. And between 1970, 1977, she corresponded with the well-known English esotericist and portrait painter Vera Stanley Alder. They met two times in London, 1970 and 1972, and got along very well. Edith planned to publish a Swedish edition of Alder's books The Finding of the Third Eye and The Fifth Dimension, but had to abandon these plans. The preface to The Finding of the Third Eye was written by Alice Bailey, amanuensis for the Tibetan adept D.K. Vera Stanley Alder, was one in a group of individuals who during the 1930s and 1940s received personal instruction by D.K. as documented in the two volumes Discipleship in the New Age by Alice Bailey. Vera Stanley Alder is given the alias LDO, and her instructions can be found on 127, 135, Volume 1, and pp. 443. 459, Volume 2. Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lawrence wrote an interesting essay on Alder in his book Knowledge of Life 5. In spite of all contacts and studies, Edith Neale Lassen was in many ways more of a mystic than esotericist. She freely mixed channeled messages of dubious content and prophecies of doom with esoteric philosophy without comprehending the differences in quality or source. Neither did she understand that the anthroposophical view of UFOs was very negative, a romantic demons, although this opinion was made clear to her in a letter from anthroposophist and Flying Saucer Review editor Gordon Creighton, who wrote, "I think the creatures in the flying saucers are evil, and I do not think they come from other planets or other galaxies." Letter to Edith Neale Lassen, May 31, 1966. Readers of my latest book, blog and articles are aware of that I have advanced the theory that some of the physical contactees of the 1950s, Adamski, Ange Lussi, Van Tassel, Fry, Menger, were involved in a cultural influence test. An experiment implemented by a group of benevolent aliens, Earth-based or extraterrestrial, a group with access to the Mana technology. This test was done in cooperation with the Higher Intelligence Agency, the custodians of the ancient wisdom, using a new type of phenomena as attraction as they used spiritualist phenomena in connection with the founding of the Theosophical Society in 1875. If this theory is correct, those actively involved with these early contactees could also be expected to experience some form of paranormal or UFO manifestations as confirmation of the authenticity of the contact. When it comes to Edith Neale Lassen, I have found one such UFO encounter of special interest. She described this incident only to her closest friends and correspondents. In a letter, March 1, 1962, to the Cosmic Brotherhood Association, Yokohama, Japan, she writes, "In November 1955, on a moonlit evening between 22:23 p.m. about 15 kilometers south of Linköping, while waiting in my car for a train to pass, I suddenly caught sight of a beautiful green light far above the way, Lin's green signal light. In order to see better, I rolled down the car, pane on the left side, and put out my head, and there, a few hundred meters above the ground, a big bell-shaped flying saucer with portholes and landing gears was suspended in the air. In the clear moonlight, it looked like a magnificent silhouette of the world-famous Venusian scout design. From one side of the portholes shone a shaft of green light, and from the other a shaft of orange light. The colors and the intensity reminded much about our most beautiful neon light advertisements, as I had time to watch this silhouette suspended in the air for 2 or 3 minutes before it disappeared of sight. I noticed the details as above described. The next day, a local newspaper reported that 5 people south of Linköping had observed a flying saucer. The description of the observers tallied with my own observation. Edith had mentioned this observation already in 1956 to Desmond Leslie. Later she also told Leslie of a detail about the craft she had observed that puzzled her. As I have had the opportunity to watch space ships on many occasions, I know that the photos of GA are genuine. Particular 2 occasions, I remember. In 1955, here in Sweden, about 15 kilometers south of Linköping, I watched a Venusian scout craft with 4 portholes hovering for several minutes and at a very close distance. And in 1956, while standing on a mountain plateau in the Austrian Alps, a huge mothership passed silently, but with great speed, close to the plateau. Both mentioned spacecrafts were of the exact type and appearance as those GA took by help of his telescope and Brownie camera from Palmer Garden. If you happen to have photos of a scout craft with 4 portholes in your files, I should appreciate very much to get photo print in black white reproduction. Unfortunately, only 3 portholes can be seen on the scout craft which GA took. In OPR he speaks about 4 portholes. She wrote to several ufologists worldwide to relate and discuss this problem of 3 or 4 portholes on the scout craft. Her detailed observation and puzzlement on this issue does give some credence to the observation. Here a quote from a letter to Gray Barker, March 9, 1968. If you find a photo print of a Venusian scout ship, the Adamski type, with 4 portholes, please let us know, as all the photo prints which we received from GA for the mentioned 2 books had only 3 portholes. Personally, I know that GA is right when he speaks about 4 portholes, as I have seen a Venusian space craft of exact the same type and form as that reproduced on the cover of the English edit of Flying Saucers have landed at a very close distance, about 15 kilometers south of Linköping here in Sweden in 1955, and it had 4 portholes. As Edith mentioned, a newspaper article reporting that 5 people had observed the same craft outside Linköping. I have tried to find this article, but so far no luck. If someone could locate this article, it would indeed be a fascinating confirmation of her close encounter. Perhaps in this way Edith Nielsen really became involved in a psychological and cultural test implemented by a group of benevolent alien visitors, the esoteric intervention theory. And this in spite of her personality faults, idiosyncrasies and rather fanatical missionary zeal. Future history and research can hopefully give us the truth about this mystery. That will probably not happen until the real history behind mainstream history is revealed. Then we will better understand the significance and work done by outsider scientists, heretics and the individuals whose dharma it is to be of the Pathfinder force trying to create a real new age on this planet, where all human beings strive for the good, the true and the beautiful. Edith Nielsen often bitterly complained about the difficulty in finding trustworthy and dedicated co-workers in her mission. She was not an easy woman to get along with. Stubborn, demanding and with an iron will. She worked 14, 16 hours every day and often exhausted her frail body. But in spite of her faults, she succeeded in her endeavors, inspiring hundreds of, especially young people, to enter UFO research or a study of the esoteric tradition. She was a pioneer and a woman with a mission, so I give the last word to Edith Nielsen, expressed in a letter to Daniel and to Howlita Fry, January 10, 1975. The mentioned photo of the scout ship taken by Tahalitha at Merlin, Man is a treasure to me too, due to the fact that in November 1955, on my way to Stockholm, a scout ship of exact the same appearance manifested above my head 15 kilometers south of Linköping while waiting in my little car for a train to pass. It was late in the evening, and maybe, in order to draw my attention, a strong green light was beaming from one side of the craft and a strong orange light from the opposite side. Later I understood it meant a greeting and an encouragement from our brothers to overcome all adversities and difficulties which the information, work about the UFOs and the brothers' messages to man of Earth would cause here in Sweden. Indeed beyond imagination and description. Thanks to these greetings and encouragements in critical hours, I got the needed inner strength to face and to overcome the adversities of all sorts and to continue the new age information work of Parthenon during the latter 17th years here in Sweden. Photo by Tahalitha Fry, Oregon, November 1968. Heretic among the heretics. Now and then I am asked, both as a professional librarian and a FUCO worker, to suggest interesting UFO titles suitable for beginners who wish to acquaint themselves with the subject. This is no easy undertaking considering the enormous amount of UFO books published since the 1950s. Naturally, I recommend a few Swedish titles, but usually I am asked what I personally regard as the best international works in the genre, and then always one name comes up, Jacques Vallée. He is a combination of intellectual outsider, iconoclast and heretic among the heretics. I don't agree with all his views, but he makes you think, challenging old theories and ufological dogmas. Jacques Vallée was also the foremost ideological inspiration when Anders Liljegren, Kjell Johnsen and I founded AFU in 1973. We quoted from Passport to Magonia in the first published information sheet from our group. Besides his many books, there are several interviews found on the internet that can be studied by readers with a serious and scholarly mind. Some of these are referenced on the Wikipedia site. More information can also be found at his personal website. Vallée can be described as a heretic of the third degree. He is a heretic in the eyes of mainstream science because of his serious interest in phenomena regarded as fantasy and irrational nonsense by most academics and skeptics. He is also in many respects a heretic in the ufological community because of his critical views on the extraterrestrial hypothesis, formulated for example in Dimensions, a casebook of alien contact. I believe that the UFO phenomenon represents evidence for other dimensions beyond space-time. The UFOs may not come from ordinary space, but from a multiverse which is all around us, and of which we have stubbornly refused to consider the disturbing reality in spite of the evidence available to us for centuries. Such a theory is required in order to explain both the modern cases and the Chronicles of Magonia, the abductions and the psychic component. p. 284. But Jacques Vallée is also a heretic in a deeper and more philosophical sense because of his lifelong interest in hermetic and esoteric traditions, an interest he shared with his friend and UFO research colleague astronomer Dr. Alan Hayek, 1910–1986. This may come as a surprise to many mainstream or traditional ufologists, especially as Vallée and Hayek are regarded as two of the foremost champions of scientific and critical UFO research. These philosophical interests of the duo has become more well known since the publication of Forbidden Science, Vallée's Diaries in two volumes, and Jeffrey J. Kripal's Authors of the Impossible, 2010. I devote one chapter in my new book Gidden 08 Vander, UFO och den esoteriska tradition, to the spiritual search of Vallée and Hayek. Parallel to his academic studies at Sorbonne and Lille, Vallée read all he could find on subjects like hermeticism, alchemy, magic, mysticism and esotericism. When he started his ufological career in the 1960s, he continued these studies but kept them in the background. It came a quite a surprise to Vallée that his astronomer friend Alan Hayek shared his lifelong interest in hermeticism and esoteric traditions. During a car journey in November 1966, Valli asked Hayek if he was interested in paranormal phenomena before he embarked on a career in astronomy. Hayek revealed that he had been a devoted student of Hermetic, Rosicrucian and esoteric traditions all his life, but he never told his colleagues, they would think I'm crazy. With this background, the Hayek and Valli discussions in the classic The Edge of Reality, 1975, can be seen in a different perspective. This is not just two eminent scientists examining the UFO enigma but also two erudite scholars of esoteric traditions comparing notes. In spite of his warnings of the social consequences of irrational contactee cults in Messengers of Deception, Jacques Valli is in his philosophy and research both the critical scientist and the searching esotericist. In the two volumes of Forbidden Science this becomes very clear. Here are two quotes. Has the future spiritual state of man already been achieved by some individuals? Have certain gifted men already achieved contact, on some plane, with those who may be guiding our psychic evolution? Forbidden Science, Volume I, p. 80. The history of ufology should be placed within an esoteric context. The UFO problem, the question of parapsychology, are central to this business. Looking for the solution isn't just a scientific project, it's a quest, an initiation, an enigma like that of the Sphinx. Forbidden Science, Volume 2, p. 211. Something of a mystery to me is why Jacques Valli in his studies of Hermeticism and Rosicrucians never considered the vast theosophical literature, especially as there is a strong historical connection between theosophy and the UFO movement. After reading the two volumes of Forbidden Science, I wrote a letter to Valli in December 2010 asking for his views. Unfortunately, he never answered. But my question is still valid, as I formulated it in the letter. I was somewhat surprised through that you only mention Rosicrucians, Manly P. Hall and Steiner's Anthroposophy but not the theosophical literature, Blavatsky, Leadbeater, and Alice Bailey, who are more directly of interest when it comes to the UFO enigma. Theosophy is actually contact cases without saucer technology. Reading Jacques Valli is an intellectual adventure and his tomes are must reading for every serious ufologist. I sympathize with his conclusion stated in the foreword to Dimensions. A casebook of alien contact, they, UFOs, provide one of the most exciting challenges ever presented to science, to our collective imagination, to human reason. Forbidden Science versus Dark Science. Finally it arrived. The third volume of Jacques Valli's diaries, Forbidden Science. This time with the subtitle Journals 1980-1989. On the Trail of the Hidden Truths. The two former volumes were published in 1992 and 2008. Like its predecessors, this is a massive tome, 513 pages including index and notes. The general tone of this volume is more somber as Valli with sadness and pessimism follow the decline of ufology in the 1980s coupled with the increasing manipulation and disinformation coming from shady characters associated with various intelligence agencies. The lie, steal, and cheat department, in Valli's words. Giving a detailed and accurate review of this massive work is a mission impossible. There are so many UFO incidents, personalities, events, ideas, theories and personal memories and anecdotes mentioned that makes it necessary to concentrate on a few themes. As I was an active ufologist in the 1980s, it is exceedingly fascinating to once again encounter familiar names and UFO cases, but this time from the personal inside view of Jacques Valli. American ufology in the 1980s was heavily influenced and partly ruined by disinformation from various intelligence agencies. Bogus or very questionable documents were distributed to ufologists who often swallowed the bait, resulting in endless debates and conflicts in the UFO community. Valli understood very early that this was a trap, and he gives many sad examples of how even serious ufologists were sidetracked by this game, when they instead should have been doing classic field investigation. If the object of this disinformation was to destroy the UFO movement, they sure did an excellent job. Valli is also convinced that the absurd theories about cattle mutilations as caused by predators, presented by FBI investigator Ken Rommel, was a disinformation job funded by the CIA. Ken Rommel threatens legal action against those who might propagate rumors of unnatural death. No wonder the ranchers are keeping the best cases quiet.